Hello and welcome to Pete's Percussion Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Zambito, and once again, it's PASIC week. So here we are with part two of my PASIC preview, and three more short interviews to get you ready for the week. Part one featured folks who were presenting on Thursday and Friday, and that came out yesterday. This time, we're focusing on sessions taking place on Saturday. So let's get to it. First up, Hector Heal. Hector is the director of percussion at Vista Ridge High School and Henry Middle School in the Leander School District just north of Austin, Texas, where he's been for the last 11 years. He got his undergrad degree from Texas A&M Commerce and did a year of grad work at TCU before taking the position at Vista Ridge. Hector's percussion ensemble was also one of the winners of the IPEC in the high school division. His group is playing Saturday morning at 9 a.m. in the Wabash Ballroom. Here's Hector talking about his group's concert and what it took to get them ready for the performance. All right, Hector, tell me about the group you're bringing to perform for PASIC and things you're planning to do for that concert.
Okay, well, we're taking up the Vista Ridge High School Percussion Ensemble, and we're taking up 23 kids, so we've got about 45 kids in the entire percussion studio here at Vista Ridge, and so we did an audition at the end of last school year, and we basically decided, okay, cool, these are the kids we're going to be taking, so the top 23 of our kids, and so we're going up there on Thursday, of PASIC, and then I've got a couple kids that are competing at the solo competition that night, like under the marching category, and then the next day we got a rehearsal at Center Grove High School, and the next morning is the actual gig, Saturday morning, 9 a.m. in Wabash Hall, and then the next day we're going to a Colts game. So that'll be a lot of fun. Yeah. So we'll be doing that. And then the following morning, we fly back out like at 4 a.m. or something like that, something ridiculous. And then that's it. So that's the whole trip. The pieces that we're going to be playing, we're doing five pieces. We're opening up with one of Nathan Daughtry's newest pieces, Chasing Infinity, which they used for the Dutch National Percussion Championships this past spring. And so, we'll be doing kind of like the North American premiere of this piece, at PASIC. And then the second piece we're doing is going to be Michael Lorello's Spine. And so we'll be performing that as well. The third piece that we're doing is a commission, brand new commission by Ivan Trevino called Make a Joyful Noise, which is basically kind of like about his child, his newborn baby, basically. And so just kind of like the everything that comes with having a child and like all the different noises and experiences and so on and so forth. And so he lives here in Austin, so he's actually coming like periodically and kind of like working with the kids and like, cool, like, you know, what do you have in your mind in this particular part of the piece? And you know, let's change that. I don't like the way that sounds after all, or whatever the case may be, you know, or this sounds way cooler than I thought. And so, and then the fourth piece that we're playing is, Mag 7 by Michael Burt. And so as soon as I saw Eastman perform that last year, I just totally fell in love with it. And then University of Nebraska, came down, Percussion Ensemble came down with Dave Hall and performed on our campus last spring, and they played that too as part of their concert, and it was just like, okay, I need to get my hands on this piece, and we're gonna do that. That's been super fun, but it's also been like it's been a challenge because it was written for seven of Mr. Burt's doctoral students from Eastman, you know, so So as you can imagine, with seven high school kids, it's been a little bit of a challenge, but they're hanging in there. But it's a lot of fun. It's really tricky. I think it's going to be a work in progress until the day of, you know, but that's been super cool. And then we're going to close with a thank you scientist piece called Rube Goldberg Variations. And Thank You Scientist is kind of a progressive rock band that I actually started listening to them a few years ago whenever Bluecoats played one of their pieces called, what's the name of that piece, Psychopomp. I think that was their opener that year. And so I was like, man, I've never heard of this band. So I started listening to it, checking it out. And so I was like, dude, this band is kicking, you know? So I started listening to a lot of their stuff. And so one of the pieces off of the Stranger Things Prevail album, I think is what it's called, is Rube Goldberg Variations. And it's kind of like it kind of has like two or three like themes, and it just goes through a bunch of different styles, you know, of kind of the same themes. And so I decided to go ahead and contact them once we found out that we got selected to perform at PASIC. I decided to contact them and see if they would allow us to arrange it for PASIC. And so they said, yeah, you go ahead. And so we took care of all the rights and all that kind of stuff. And so that's the piece that we'll be closing with. It's all 23 of my percussionists that we're taking on the trip. They'll be on that piece. So it's going to be a super packed stage. And, you know, but, I'm actually in the works of trying to publish the piece too, to try to make it available at PASIC as well. So that's kind of our whole program right there.
Great. Is this the first time you've got taken the group, the PASIC?
This will be the first time taking a high school group. 4 years ago, it's actually kind of funny. My juniors and seniors right now, they went with me. I took them 4 years ago whenever they were seventh and eighth graders, because we were the inaugural winners of the middle school competition. And so back in 2014, and so fast forward 4 years later, now, you know, they're my oldest kids. And so we'll be going a second time. There's, you know, obviously quite a few. We only took 14 kids back then. So there's quite a few that are like, this is their first time. But I do have like about half the group that it's like their second go around. So that's kind of cool, you know. So, yeah, we're excited.
When did you find out that you got in? And what was that? Getting to tell the kids that you got in, what was that like?
It was awesome, man. It was an experience. I got a call from Dr. Hall, and he was making, you know, calling up all the people the same day and called us up. And I remember actually sitting right here, as a matter of fact, and, you know, he called my office phone and yeah, you know, so he was like, hey, and I've known, Dave since TCU. Mm. I used to teach at TCU, and he was a grad student at the time, so we kind of go back a little bit. And so he's like, hey man, just wanted to let you know that you guys were selected. And so of course I had a student in the room at the time, and so I was like, hold on, give me 1 second. And I asked the student, like, hey, would you mind stepping out real quick? It's kind of an important call. And so yeah, it was just like, man, it was, as soon as I hung up, it was just like, oh my god, this is so cool, I can't wait to tell the kids. And we actually had our band banquet that night. And no, that's not true. I'm sorry. Okay. We had our band banquet that weekend. I believe he called me like Monday or Tuesday of that week. And we had our band banquet that weekend, and we couldn't say anything to anybody yet, except for like my principal.
Sure.
About, you know, about that we were selected. So by the time it got to that Friday, I was just like dying. Like, man, I think the kids were asking too, like, hey, have you heard anything yet? Because I told them, like, we'd find out probably, you know, sometime in June.
Yeah.
And by this point, it was already kind of like, you know, June 1 or whatever it was. And so they were like, hey, have you heard anything? And like, no, not yet. Even though I already knew, I still couldn't say anything. And anyhow, so I called up Dave and I said, hey, would you be okay if I go ahead and tell the band at our banquet? And so he's like, yeah, I think at this point we've already gotten confirmations from everybody that's going to be coming to PASIC. So that should be fine. Just ask them to not post anything on social media or any of that kind of stuff. And so it's like, okay, we'll do our best. And so I went ahead and announced it. I brought the entire progression program up with me on stage, and, and I made the formal announcement to everyone, and so it was cool. It was a really cool experience.
And pandemonium ensued.
Oh, most definitely, for sure. You know, tears and just like, you know, everyone kind of just, it's like, it just gleaming, you know, with joy and just like, you know, I thought about it afterwards, like, man, why didn't I like record that? Or why didn't I ask like my wife to record it or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was already after the fact when I thought about that, you know. But yeah, it was such a cool experience to share that, you know. And for a lot of the kids, it was like the ones that this is their second time going, right after that, they came up to me and were like, oh my God, I want to go back to the Risen Discovery Center. Or, oh my God, I want to go check this out or that. I can't wait to, you know, whatever. And so, and whenever PASIC has been here in Austin, some of my kids have gone to that too. So they know what it's about, you know. So yeah, like immediate, just like, you know, excitement. So yeah, that's cool. And of course, parents asking too, like, all right, so what exactly is this that we're doing?
So, sure.
Where are we going? And so, but yeah.
And then you finally could like be like,
yeah.
Oh.
Oh, I know. And then it's just like immediately in the back of my mind, I'm like, okay, well, and here we go, planning a trip, you know, right, and planning the program and how we're going to get up there and how we're going to pay for it. And, who do we get permission from? And who do I ask to commission, or do we get a commission, or, you know, do we just play the same pieces that we submitted, or, you know, like all that kind of stuff, you know? So, and still I have a long list on my phone of stuff that's like, okay, well, I still need to knock this out, and this still needs to get done. And talking to my principal, you know, and like, fortunately he's actually going to be going up to the concert. So he'll be flying up the day before. So he'll get to check it out. And so, yeah, talking to my fine arts director and my fine arts secretary, I'm like, okay, let's go through the checklist of all the permissions, everything that needs to be signed. And, you know, taking the kids out of state, you know, is a huge deal. Yeah. And so it's not just going a field trip down the road or something, you know. So yeah, it's been cool. And so far it's been okay. It's been a challenge to try to do all this with marching band at the same time,
yeah,
you know, but it's been a super fun ride so far.
What is the rehearsal schedule that you've come upon to get ready for this?
Well, so I kind of contacted a bunch of friends of mine that have taken groups before, and specifically friends that are just kind of percussion directors that have done the state. Because it's a state year for us this year. We're in a 6A classification, and so for us, this is, and we go every other year, by the way. So it's like, you know, last year was the 5A's, this year's the 6A's, and the next year will be the 5A's again, and so on and so forth. And so I wanted to talk to them. Okay, what did you do on the state year? How did you kind of figure out your rehearsal schedule? And like, did you kind of like front load everything, all the basic stuff, and try to learn as much as you possibly could up front, and then kind of like as you're going through the season, you kind of lightened up, or vice versa, or what, you know? So I talked to a lot of people, and we decided that the best thing for us to do would be during summer band to try to learn as many notes and rhythms as we possibly could, and so we did kind of budget some time during our summer band program that we wouldn't normally have to worry about, because we're at that point we're really just trying to learn, you know, marching band beats and drill and so on and so forth. But this time we actually kind of budgeted a little bit of time, and then once the school year started, we decided to do 2 days a week of basic rehearsals during their classes, and then the other 3 days marching band stuff. And we did zero after school basic stuff, and we did 2 days a week before school PASIC stuff. And then once we got through BOA Austin, which was the last weekend of September, once we got past that, then we switched over. So now we're doing 3 days a week PASIC rehearsals and classes, and 2 days a week marching band stuff. And we're still doing 2 days a week before school with the PASIC stuff as well. So it's been hard. We do have a So the kids have one day off after school. They've got Tuesdays after school off. And as we get closer, we probably are going to have to fill up that Tuesday with rehearsals. But at least right now, I kind of want to give them that time to still be able to do work, homework, or hang out with their friends, or, you know, have a job.
Hang out with friends. Come on. Nobody does that. Yeah. Right. That's called rehearsal, Hector.
Right. Exactly. Most of that's actually me, like, so I can hang out with my wife.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Right.
So, yeah.
Smart move.
Yes, sir.
You mean so. in the possible daytime hours is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Trying to find the time just anywhere I can to just hang out with the family. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Have you figured out how much stuff you're, because you're flying up and back, right?
We are.
So yeah. How much equipment are you taking?
Okay, so most of it is going to be, thankfully, most of it we're going to be able to borrow from Payson. So I was able to connect with Marimba One, and they'll be lending us 4 or 5 octave marimbas for our concerts.
Nice.
Contacted Yamaha and Pearl Adams as well, and it looks like they'll probably be lending us 2 vibes for both of those companies as well. So I've been talking to a few companies to try to see if, like, okay, can we get some more stuff? Pearl Adams is also lending us some chimes. They're also lending us a Glock, and so we'll still have a full truckload to take up. And then the rehearsal that we have the day before PASIC, we're doing it at Center Grove, and thankfully Josh Torres has been super helpful, and he has offered to basically lend us the same amount of equipment that PAS is going to lend us. So we'll be able to use that for our rehearsal as well, so that we don't have to take stuff in a truck just to use for the rehearsal and not even have to use for the gig, you know? Yeah. So that'd be cool. So that'll work out. So
that's great.
It's still going to be a lot of stuff. Every time we've taken, like, when we've gone up to Midwest before, or with Vista Ridge or with Henry Middle School, or we've gone to TMEA before, you know, like, it's always been like a double decker. Like, we've always gotten just a huge 26 foot box truck, and we've stuck like the tallest risers, like with the longest legs. So we've kind of double layered it and stuffed a bunch of stuff underneath it, put a bunch of stuff on top of it too, and just kind of rolled with that. Well, I'm sure we'll probably have to do something similar to that. But at least we won't have to take, hopefully we don't have to take any marimbas, and hopefully we don't have to take any vibes too. So that'll be really cool.
Well, timpani as well.
We'll take our own timpani, only because I'm sure I could probably get like a company to lend us a set, but, you know, just the temperament of the pedals and all that kind of stuff. We feel better just taking that with us. So now the challenging thing is the weather. You know, the fact that it's going to be so stinking cold in that truck, you know, that's going to be something that, you know, we're just going to have to deal with, you know, and pull a timpani out and kind of like, here we go. Let's clear the heads. Let's get them all. Let's try to get the drums, you know, to room temperature as much as possible before the gig. So we'll just have to do our best there, basically.
Got it. That's crazy. And you said Saturday at 9. Your
Saturday, 9 a.m. Yes, sir. Yeah.
I don't know. I was thinking that's the – it's I, how do you feel about that time slot? I mean, I know you're happy to be there. I'm just curious what your
– Well, last time we went, we performed, if I remember correctly, 4 years ago. We performed at 11 a.m., and we went on right after the Woodlands High School. And, you know, the amount of time that PAS gives you is you only have an hour to get into the room and set up all your stuff. And then, like, you start the gig, you know. I just remember back then thinking, like, we did not have, you know, we just didn't have as much time as I would have liked to have had. And so, and part of it, too, is I think, like, when one group performs, they want to stick around and take pictures and greet people and so on and so forth, rightfully so. But at the same time, like, they know that there's another group coming up. So the Woodlands did a great job of, like, you know, trying to get out of there as quickly as possible while we tried to get in. But even then, I just think it's always you're going to have that traffic, I think, regardless.
Yeah.
So this time around, I specifically requested for us to go first in the morning in that room. You know, just to try to see, like, as soon as they open up those doors, we can get in there, start getting our stuff set up, and we don't have to worry about the traffic, you know, trying to get another group out while we're trying to get in.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much my, I learned some things the first time, you know, going about what I would do differently in the events we went again, if we had the opportunity to.
I was thinking about how late in the, that it's like, you know, nearly near the end of PASIC too.
Yeah. Yeah. So Saturday morning, I was thinking about that too. Like, how many people would still be there, you know, and I don't know if people would fly in. I mean, I don't know if people would be there for the first few days and then maybe jet to. And of course, like, you know, this is like in the middle of like games or postseason games for high schools and for colleges.
Right.
So how many people would still be around for that, you know? And so, but, and that was a question that I did ask a few people, like, and again, going back to, you know, colleagues of mine, just percussion directors that have done it before, like, did you feel that your attendance at your Saturday morning concert was small, you know? And, from everyone I spoke to said like that it was still a good turnout, you know, still
yeah.
A lot of people around, and, you know, so that put me at ease. That made me feel better about it.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds great. Well, I look forward to, I look forward to catching it. I'll be around until I leave early Sunday morning. So,
oh, cool.
So awesome. I should be awake. I usually go for the run, the fun run. So I'm usually, you know, I'll be physically there sometimes, not always mentally, but I tend to.
Sure. Sure. Well, I know I will be physically there. I don't know if I will be mentally there. Yeah. I might forget about the whole thing until afterwards when I watch a video or something and like, oh yeah, that happened there.
Yeah.
It'll be a huge blur, no doubt.
Oh yeah. So.
Next up, Megan Arnes. Megan is the assistant professor of percussion at the University of Missouri, who also happens to be my employer, and her office is 30 feet down the way. And she's been a guest on Pete's Percussion Podcast twice before. Check out episodes 3 and 48 of the show. One of Megan's many chamber groups at Mizzou, the Chiedza Mbira Ensemble, is the performing group with Shota Mbira artist Muzikewa Chingodza for a performance of traditional Shona music. This World Daytime Showcase concert is taking place Saturday morning at 10 a.m. in room 120. Here's Megan talking about the performance and how she got started developing the Mbira Group program at Mizzou.
Tell me about what you're doing at PASIC this year.
Cool. So we have a guest artist arriving here at Mizzou tomorrow. Mm-hmm. His name's Muzikewa Chingodza, uh-huh. And he's a musician from Zimbabwe. He plays in the Shona tradition. And we have been studying Shona music from Zimbabwe for 4 years now here at Mizzou. And I've been studying for about 8 years. And when I arrived here to Mizzou, I received an email from a man in the English department, Anand Prahlad, asking if he could reserve a room in Loeb Hall, our building that we're sitting in here right now, for an Mbira masterclass. And I was like, wait, what? You know, we're like coming to the middle of Missouri, you know, this instrument isn't too popular in the United States, and I don't think it's played anywhere else in the state of Missouri, regularly at least. And so we ended up being neighbors as well. It turns out he invited me to a dinner for this guest that he had in, and it turns out we live like two houses away from each other. So we started playing Mbira together on a weekly basis. And some of the students started playing with us, and slowly it just sort of snowballed into more and more people being interested in this instrument. And we formed an ensemble really sort of at the end of that first year, but definitely the second year. And we've just been slowly buying more imbiras and getting more students interested. And we are committed to bringing in a Zimbabwean master musician to teach us once a year at least, because the repertoire is all taught by rote. And so we're not going to learn it out of a book. We're not going to learn it out of YouTube. We're going to support the musicians that this treasured tradition belongs to. So we've kind of teamed up with an organization in Eugene, Oregon, called the Kutzenier Cultural Arts Center. And there's a wonderful woman there named Marilyn who works on all the artist visas and setting up these tours for them. So she brings in at least one musician a year and sets up a tour. And so we've been going through her for the past 3 years. So this will be actually Music Kiwa's second visit to Mizzou. And so we'll work with him for 3 or 4 days and leading up to our concert here on Tuesday night, and then a few days after, and then we will perform at PASIC on Saturday.
Awesome. What was the path in terms of how did you apply into PASIC? What was the grouping that this is listed under?
Sure, yeah. So this is a daytime world showcase concert, and the concert is Music Kiwa is the headliner of this concert. It's not our ensemble, but this is Music Kiwa's concert, and then we're playing with him. So we're sort of like his ensemble for this performance. And so the process was that I approached Music Kiwa because I know through being on the diversity committee that we are trying to create a more diverse pool of applicants, and especially from different places around the world, to have more of an international presence, and which is a tricky thing because PASIC is always in the USA. So I think, of course, we're always going to have more musicians from the US. But so anyway, I think it's our job, especially my job working with a musician such as Music Kiwa or these Mbira artists on a regular basis. Why not show PASIC what they can do? And so Mbira hasn't been played too frequently at PASIC in the past. I know it's been on a few concerts, but I think this might be one of the first big concerts totally by a Zimbabwean. So I guess the process was I approached Music Kiwa to see if he would be interested. And I asked his, I guess I could say manager, but the woman who organizes the tours, if this would be a good idea and if the dates before that were available to make sure that we could line it up with PASIC. And then we kind of had two contingency plans. If the application was accepted, we would do what we're doing now. And if it wasn't accepted, we would just have a concert at Mizzou, which would be fine, and he would go somewhere else next. So we're glad it worked out this way and so excited to spend a few days with him and to have this concert on campus as well, and then to go to PASIC and really for everyone to see the talents of Music Kiwa. I think they're going to love it.
Yeah. What's the time and where at PASIC?
Yeah, so it's on Saturday at 10 a.m. in room 120.
Okay. So it is a smaller...
It's a smaller room.
Yeah. I was going to say that would be that instrument is so,
it's
is,
so
it requires
small.
A smaller space.
It does. Yeah. I'm glad they put us in a smaller space because I don't know what we would have done with the mics, and I'm just really nervous about the microphones, but I think we'll be good now with some light amplification. I think it will be fine.
Yeah. Tell me about getting to how you shared the news with the studio.
Yes, this was really fun because it was, you know, sometimes you have a week of bad news, then you have a week of good news. This happened in a week of good news. And one of our guest artists from last year, Patience Mungeri, said, you know, it would be great if you all got together on a more informal basis and played. And she said, we do this and we call them Mbira parties, where it's kind of like a potluck where you cook and bring food, share food, and play Mbira. So I've been trying to host a few of those and encourage the grad students to host them as well if they can every once in a while. And so we had already scheduled to have an Mbira party to kind of celebrate the end of the semester. And so I had invited a lot of the musicians who were not only in the Mbira ensemble but in the other African ensembles and the Latin percussion ensemble, steel band, things like that, and some of our community collaborators as well. And so, yeah, I found out that afternoon. So there's no way I would have been able to keep it a secret if I had heard about it at school or something like that. But I had everyone came over to my house, and I was like, guess what? MusicQ's application was accepted, and we're going to put together a program with him and share it at PASIC. So everyone was really excited about that.
Yeah.
And it really came at a great time for the ensemble because, like I said, it's just kind of been growing and growing and growing. And we can definitely learn more repertoire and hone our skills. And, I mean, we are still complete beginners at the instrument and compared to someone like MusicQ. But also, we have so many people playing now, and you wouldn't well, that's not necessarily true, but in a lot of cases, it would be just a few people playing in Biera, although there are many different scenarios of how this instrument is used in Zimbabwe. So, yeah, we've got a full group, I guess I could say. Actually, sometimes we have two groups, a beginning group and an advanced group. So we're trying to let everyone be a part of this by kind of trading on and off. But also, we met a really awesome collaborator last year in the spring semester. So after I had put the application in, we'd been working with him before I found out. But his name is Morgan Matsiga, and he lives here in Colombia. And he's Zimbabwean. He speaks Shona, grew up in Zimbabwe. And he plays the hosho, which is the accompanying rattle to the imbira. And meeting Morgan and having him play with the ensemble just really helped make it more complete because he's able to add so much about the cultural aspects of the music and life in Zimbabwe and, you know, also just a really nice, kind soul who really encourages us. He says he feels like home when he's playing with our ensemble. It gives him a taste of home since he's so far away from it. So, yeah, adding him to the ensemble last year was so awesome. So he'll be traveling with us as well. He's a solid hosho player. So it's been great to teach the students that instrument as well.
Yeah. You had if I'm not mistaken, a pretty large – obviously, the opportunity to play at PASIC. You ended up having, if I'm not mistaken, basically the whole studio was like – we're in, yeah. Right?
There was a larger than usual enrollment in World Percussion Ensemble this semester, which is great. You know, we don't have a giant percussion studio, and so it's a very manageable number. And everybody's been, you know, doing a lot of work, learning a lot of music, and I've just been hearing a lot of imbira in the hallways outside mm-hmm. of class, which is very encouraging.
Do you have enough Mimbiras?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. We have quite a few. And actually, we're to the point now where a lot of the students are buying their own, especially if they're graduating and they don't have access to these anymore. So, you know, when we meet up with someone like Abby at PASIC, who worked here for a few years, she has a couple. And then Anand Prahlad also has many, 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 and I have some of my own, but then the studio owns a lot now too. So yeah, we have plenty of imbiras. mm-hmm.
What's it been like to teach either a larger amount of students or having more students who are probably new to the group this semester?
Mm-hmm. Well, I teach in a variety of ways, this ensemble. Sometimes I will teach something new, where, you know, I will play something, they repeat it back, and we kind of continue that process. But also, the students move at very different levels. So I try to stay very flexible and just aware of what's happening, you know. In the beginning, it's easier because it's like, okay, we're going to learn this part. No one knows it. Great. Yeah. But then others pick it up quicker, which is fine. And others retain it longer. And, you know, everyone has different learning styles. So it's really a community effort where the more advanced players will step in and I'll say, okay, you know, Hannah, go teach John and Chris this part. Okay, Noah, do you know that part? Okay, Noah, why don't you take Taylor and Darren and teach them that part? And then we'll come back. Usually we'll do groups like that for 15 minutes and then we'll come back and we'll play together. Because mm-hmm. in Biera, there's so many different parts. And I think it would be difficult to teach everyone every single part and every single variation. So instead, we kind of break into several parts and everyone learns sort of different things. So when we come together, it's a very sort of rich texture. Mm-hmm.
When you all are performing here before PASIC, are you going by the same 50-minute? Are you going to block it, be like kind of take a timer almost?
Yeah, I don't know. We're probably going to be more flexible here. I'm going to talk to Music UO about that, and we'll see how rehearsals are going and things. I would like to keep it on the shorter side, but also, yeah, we'll see. I'm not positive about that yet. I was just thinking about that, actually, as I was making the Facebook group, because usually I'll leave an hour and a half for concerts, but that's with set changes and intermission and all of these, and I try to keep everything under an hour and a half. And this one I was like, maybe I'll just put this at an hour. Because, yeah, it does have, you know how it feels at PSIC when you're at the end, you've got your last piece, and then everyone gets up to go to the next. Right. I hate that.
10:50 so, a.m. You're like,
yeah, right. So we're gonna have to
wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basic for you.
Well, right, and there's no finite amount of time for any of these tunes. You know, sure. They could last for 3 minutes, and they could last for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So we'll try to keep it, at sort of a defined length, but I will need to be watching the time for sure.
Sure. All right. Do you, is there a plan at PASIC to do a lot of explaining while you're going through and kind of explaining how each part fits in together?
No, we're not going to do a lot of that. I will do a basic explanation, but we will more be talking about the music. Music Kiwa and Morgan and Prahlad will be speaking more about the music and where it came from and the cultural traditions that are associated with it.
Yeah. What was the, how did you get first involved with it 8 years ago?
Well, there's a class at Eastman. Yeah, there was a class at Eastman. And so I took that class and I just fell in love with the instrument and I've been playing ever since.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you gone to Zimbabwe?
No, I want to. Okay. I really want to. There's a trip this summer that I may be just kind of waiting for other things to shake out. But sure. Also, Morgan really wants to take Chiedza to Zimbabwe. So we might start to talk about possible funding for that and a study abroad trip or something. Mm-hmm. So I hope to get there within the next 5 years.
Okay. That sounds good. Because you spent so much time with Ghanaian tradition and you were there this summer, have you felt any things that are, does this feel like two completely separate traditions that you're studying in that might as well be in two different parts of the world almost?
Well, I think there's definitely a two-part answer to that because you could say that there are a lot of similarities in different music across the African continent.
Sure.
But such as polyrhythms and the way things are taught by rote and possibly some harmonies, definitely some similar rhythms. But it's so general when I say all of those things.
Sure, of course.
So when you start studying each of these traditions, I mean, even in Ghana, there are so many distinct musical traditions. And even though you could draw similarities between them, they're all so different and unique. And it's interesting to trace the similarities. Mm-hmm. But I feel like once you start becoming immersed in a tradition, if you start immersing yourself in a tradition, you just realize it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper.
Sure.
And yeah, so it's interesting too because we did just learn all this music in Ghana. And so I feel like coming back here and really focusing on Mbira this semester, it's a lot of music to keep in your head.
Sure, yeah.
So I've kind of had to switch my brain to that a little bit more. And I know the students, we've had this conversation too, because we're trying to keep all this Jill repertoire in our head. Mm-hmm. And some of them were just in here right before this playing.
I heard.
It's hard, but we're so fortunate and privileged to be able to study with master musicians and to have gone to Ghana this summer and studied again with master musicians, but where on the very land at which it originated was absolutely humbling, and we feel really fortunate to be able to do that.
And lastly, for the Pete's Percussion Podcast PASIC Preview 2018, Andres Forero. Andres is a Broadway pit percussionist best known for being the drummer for Hamilton, the musical. He's also played for a who's who of artists, both live and on recordings, and is now also working in documentary films. Andres is presenting an extended session on A Day in the Life of a Broadway Musician, along with three fellow percussionists on Broadway. Andres' session is taking place Saturday at noon in room 105. Prior to what you will hear, Andres described the session he did at PASIC 2017. Unfortunately, weeks after we recorded his portion, I realized that there was an audio problem on my end that made what he told me unusable for the podcast. But he went into a brief amount of depth, describing last year's session on getting a view into what it's like for him to actually play Hamilton from his view and his audio perspective. What you will hear is Andres' description of this year's session, how he came to create it, and why he felt it was so important to extend his project to include other Broadway musicians and what they deal with on a day-to-day basis.
So for 2018, we wanted to come up with something that was equally as powerful as last year and that had a great message and had the right intention educationally. Mm-hmm. So we sort of started to brainstorm and weren't really coming up with anything. And then one day it just hit me. I woke up and I knew exactly what I needed to do. And what I decided to do was invite three musicians that have paved the way for me and many other people that have been doing Broadway much longer than myself. And I have done many more shows than me. And what I wanted to do was bring them to perform a medley of their current Broadway show. And I also wanted to do a roundtable discussion. So that became what we were going to do. And then the next night I woke up again and I had this thought, well, I want to follow them. I want to give the people there that have never been to New York a snapshot of what it's like to be a New Yorker, to live, to walk in those people's shoes, you know. It's a difficult life. I think a lot of people, it's sort of one of those things where, you know, if you're not a rock star and you don't see on TV the behind the music and those things that where they follow you around and you realize that, you know, it's not all that glamorous. It's not that different from what we do. The you know, there's a lot of gratitude with having a job. And of course it's a wonderful thing to have, you know, and so many people want to have it. So if you have it, you're very blessed, but it's a lot of work and it's a lot of sacrifice. And what I wanted to do was paint a realistic picture of three different individuals, three different subjects' lives, and to follow them around with a camera, be like a fly on the wall for all of them, and literally walk in their shoes from their house to the theater so that a 17 or 16 or 15-year-old aspiring musician could see what they go through. Because there's so many questions, you know. A lot of times they ask the question, well, what are you doing when you play this, when you play that? But no one really asks the life question. How do you balance your life out? What is your life? You know, what do you do when you're not in the theater? What is it like? Are you married? Do you have kids? You know, what are the stresses that you deal with? So there's a lot of stuff that is real life stuff that I think that gets ignored. It gets left out a lot. And I wanted to bring that. And I thought, you know what? To me, this has a lot of integrity. And I think that we have something really special here. So I hired a wonderful videographer. And we have shot, I think we only have two more interviews to do. We've shot 8 or 9 interviews, including the subjects that we followed. And we've had 5 or 6 incredibly generous celebrity friends of mine that have donated their time and sent in video submissions. that really legitimize what it is that we're trying to speak of in the message, which I think is very, very important. So I think it's going to be a great piece. And at the end of this whole, the three guys will perform a medley of their thing. You'll see the video in between their performance. And then at the end, there's a roundtable discussion. And people will be able to really sort of channel through their questions. If they had a bunch that were not answered in the film, they'll be able to ask personally to each person. And we can all discuss. I'm going to moderate on stage these questions filtered through the three subjects. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm very, very excited about it. You know, there's kind of a vulnerability to that because, you know, you're putting yourself out there in such a way that you haven't before. You know, writing a documentary is way out of my pay grade. But I got really into it. I did a lot of studying on it. I watched so many of them that I figured a good format that could work out, and I got an incredible videographer. I have a great team, so we were able to put something together, I think, that will last a long time for people to be able to reference to, anyway, educationally.
Yeah. Were you given any directive from PAS as to what this second presentation was going to be, or did you kind of have a free reign?
No, I have a really good relationship with them. I think based on what they saw last year, they trusted that that I had the right vision for this piece. I don't think that they know that I'm crazy, you know, based on what we did last year, because, you know, what we did last year was my guy was in the hotel room still working up until literally the day of the performance.
Right.
It was a lot of work for him. And they know that there's definitely – it's in capable hands. But we have a great relationship. You know, PAS is such a great thing to be a part of, whether you're a drummer or not, because it's a global educational thing. You know, so it's globally welcoming to any instrument. And that's sort of the other thing that I want to emphasize, because I have two drummers and one percussionist. And the percussionist plays everything. He's the percussionist for the Lion King. He's been there for 21 years. And I've been working with him for roughly 20 years on other projects. We've recorded records together. And he's just an incredible musician. Comes from a family of prodigies. So, and the other two guys, one of the guys is not only a drummer, but he's also a producer. He's also a contractor. So it paints the picture, and two of them have been conductors in their shows. They've conducted their shows. So it's like, it's important for folks to know that, you know, you play the drums, you can also do this, you can also do that, if you want to do it, you know. So that was the other thing, is to have like a message that you're not just doing one thing. If you want to do seven things, you can do them as long as you do them well. And then the other drummer, you know, just plays. There's no show that goes through Broadway without filtering through him first. He's like the guy that gets called for every show when it's in its infant stage, and he's so important. And I'm so proud to be able to work with these guys on this project. Really,
the way that you're framing this, was there any moment that you thought when they are allowing you to film them and kind of follow their lives, where, you know, they turn around and be like, are you still here? Like, are you still following me around?
Yeah. I mean, there were some great moments. We were at Sean McDaniel's house, and to me, that was one of the most, special things personally. I was raised in a way that, you don't go into people's rooms. If you go into someone's house, you stay in the room that they bring you to.
Right.
And that's it. You know, there's such a level of respect being invited into someone's personal space, someone's home. And then you add to that, you know, a family, you have a child. It's a lot for someone to trust to bring someone in. And then on top of that, to bring cameras. So I was very moved by that experience. And there was such great interplay between the son and Sean and his husband. There was just so much great stuff. It was just such a, there's such a beautiful family. And it's so natural. So to be able to be a part of that and to really show that is such a gift, you know. I mean, that really is a highlight for me in this. But there were moments when, you know, I was thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm in this person's house. You know, what an honor. So, yeah.
Can I still film you?
yeah. You know, and you have, there's a child involved. So it's,
sure, yeah.
So much more delicate and so much more, so much more responsibility with making sure that, that the child has fun and enjoys that. You know, they filmed my family too. And my family isn't on social media anywhere, and we've been so focused on not allowing anyone to see them or do anything with that.
Yeah.
But for this presentation, the much bigger one that we're going to do, that I think eventually will end up at a film festival, we shot some footage of that, and we decided that it would be okay to do that. You know.
Yeah.
But it took a lot to do that.
I bet. I had I thought of a good friend of mine is we had, when we met her, I think her son at that point, she was like no social, she had like the no social media rule, no social yeah. media footprint, and I know I've met some other families along the way that have kind of developed that as a way essentially.
Yeah, it just, you know, it was just something that we established from the beginning that it was just better to. And we're pretty private people anyway, you know, it just works out fine that way. It's nice to have the life you have in New York and then come home to a very private and quiet life in New Jersey. So,
yeah. When you brought last year, when you did the presentation, how much gear did you end up bringing?
I'm very fortunate, you know, that in at the place that I'm at now, I have a lot of support from companies that I proudly use their instruments and play their instruments. So they're so willing to help, and they would bring, you know, they'll ship out a drum kit, and sometimes they have multiple people playing that particular drum kit. That year, Steve Smith and I headlined on Friday. He had his own drums, and the kit that I played was Gavin Harrison's famous kit that he played. It's a beautiful drum kit, but that was it. So they, you know, they really go out of their way to make you feel comfortable, and they sent everything that I needed. And, you know, I'm kind of a pain because I use Sonar drums, but I use Tama hardware, mm-hmm. Sabian cymbals, Remo drum heads, Bigfoot. So each person had such a task to make sure that we had what we needed, and it was never an issue. I mean, they're so good about that stuff, you know, and we're always very grateful for that. This year, I'm not playing anything, so they don't have to send anything for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they have microphones there, so you don't have to worry about that.
Oh, my God. Everything is complete state of the art. I mean, you know, I had my – it was a nightmare for them, what I brought, because I had – everything was on a big screen. Mm-hmm. They had a monitor for me. Like, they really went out of their way to make us comfortable. And they have a sound – they have a desk with a sound guy that yep. controls everything. But, yeah, it's first class. Everything is first class. So.
Yeah. Right. What time is your session?
Oh, good Lord. it's Saturday. Mariana, do you know what time it is, Dad? No, my session. I think it's at 12 o'clock on Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, 12 o'clock Saturday. And I don't know what the room is, but sure. I'm sure it's listed somewhere.
What? Wait, is it? And it's still only 50 minutes? Is that?
No. Oh. Mine's an hour and a half.
Okay.
I asked them early on. I said, look, you know, I have this kind of wacky idea of doing this film, but I need more time. And they were super great to give it to me. So.
Okay. It did sound like an hour and a half the way you explained it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an hour and a half. I mean, it wouldn't have worked otherwise. And every minute is sort of taken up, you know.
So. Yeah, of course. That's great.
Yeah. A lot of editing. Last night I was up till 4 a.m. editing interviews, and it's, you know, I've never done that before, mm-hmm. but it was such a great learning process for me, because you have to take all this footage of interview and take out the scrap, you know, extrapolate the parts that are going to give the message that you want to give. And so you have to contour this composition of a film in all the little bits that you do, you know, in each interview. And there has to be contour, and it is a composition in a way. So that's the way I thought of it. But it wasn't easy, and I'm still, you know, it's a learning process for me. So
did you create an outline to try to, and like kind of fit in the segments you're looking for on that?
Yeah, I had sort of an advanced wish list of how I wanted this thing to go. And I don't think it was too exuberant, you know. it's definitely way above my pay grade for I've never done this before.
Sure.
So it's in my wheelhouse, you know. But I knew what I wanted to do. I've seen enough movies, I've seen enough documentaries, that I figured if it's coming from my heart and I have the right people on board, you know, putting the pieces together it'll come together. And it's a short piece anyway. It's a microfilm, really. But that makes it even harder to put the message in a tiny little capsule of space, whereas, you know, you have like an hour and 10 minutes to create a message and a composition, you know? So, but it's been very challenging, but it's also one of those things where you're sort of, you know, looking into yourself and rediscovering things that, you know, I want to make this into a much bigger film. And Paul Quinn is my lawyer. He's a very dear friend. And we talked about the next step with this thing, because it's, I think it's interesting. I think that there's an audience for everything nowadays, you know, so just getting it into the right hands. And the film is being shot so beautifully by the film crew, you know, the vision is just right on point. So who knows? Sky's the limit with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and we're kind of in a heyday of documentaries in general, but also music documentaries have been really, really good.
Yeah.
What did you see any recent documentaries that you found as models?
Guitar Center just did a special on me at Hamilton, and it's on YouTube. It's basically, it's a similar concept where they, you know, they interviewed me, and they did sort of, they came to my house, but they filmed me, you know, like in New York, walking the streets. That was a great inspiration, but I also drew a lot of inspiration from a documentary that Mike Myers did on Shep Gordon called Supermensch.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
And so there was something about how he shot that you can't help but feel how he's touched by this guy, you know, who ended up touching me as well. Like, I felt so moved by the story. And I think that the outcome of that was the same. Like, the message is to, you know, create a great message for someone that has the right intention, you know. And that movie does that in spades.
Were there any issues with securing music as part of it, or is that not part of the documentary?
I'm writing all the music. We actually were just here recording. My good friend Mariana's here. She's a wonderful percussionist. And I'm writing everything. I'm playing all the instruments. She played some percussion. She's going to help me sing some stuff. But tomorrow I have Johnny Dinklage coming. He's our concert master at Hamilton. He's an incredible violinist. So he'll be here. And I wanted to do everything. You know, I got kind of crazy with it. I thought, well, I play a bunch of instruments, and I have everything here in my house, so why not use it, you know? I challenged myself probably a lot more than I should have, but I don't think that there's a stone that's been left unturned here, you know? Like, we really have given each task its proper work and go through. Like, we've really gone through every little thing to make sure that it's a sincere composition that gets presented. So,
yeah. Well, it's good. I want to see the closing credits so that it says directed by Andres Forero, you know, and it's like written by, and then like all just your name just shows up on every single, you know, list and then credits.
Yeah, there's far more people, more interesting and certainly more important people's names that are going to come up before that. But there's some really great people that have taken their time to help with this thing. And the people that, I'm not going to mention who they are, but sure, people you wouldn't believe it. You just say, there's no way. Why? You know, and you pinch yourself thinking to yourself, oh my God, is this real? Did I really just get this person to help me with this thing, you know? So mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's very exciting. And I think I don't really care about any of, you know, that stuff for myself. I think that the message is in what you're able to provide. You know, if you can get the message out to someone, then you did what you're supposed to do. That's all you need. You know, this is sort of a tool that hopefully people will continue to use. You know, it's not like a pen that works one time.
Right.
And this is a pen that you'll be able to use hopefully for many years to come. You know, it's going to go up on a site where people can just go to it. Here's some information followed by some, you know, I'm trying to get PASIC to put up a forum. It's not been done yet, so let's see if it works, where afterwards the student, if they haven't been able to ask a question, they can, for a year's time or 6-12 months time, they can still go up and send a message to any of the subjects that were there and get an answer, you know, if there's any question pertaining to that thing that they need. And I think that's a valuable tool. And if you're talking about education, which this is, there's no greater service than to actually providing service at hand. You know, so, you know, it's social engagement is important. I believe that. I think being able to socialize and being able to go into a situation where you can meet other like-minded people is really important. But you also have to be able to go there and know that you're going to leave with some information, because that's why you signed up in the first place. And I think that's why it's so great to have that institution for people that need that resource. Yeah. I'm gonna leave with probably more information and more questions than the people attending my thing, because there's so many wonderful people there that are performing. You know, it's like sort of, this is the year, the golden year to go to PASIC. There's a lot of wonderful performers.
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious though, when you, the idea of presenting, you know, your subjects' entire lives as a New York City musician, as Broadway, you know, and all these things.
Yeah.
Did that come out of something you felt like people were asking about, weren't asking about, should have been asking about? Like, what was the impetus for you to think, you know, people actually need to see this part too?
I think because a lot of times the questions that folks ask is, you know, musically related.
Sure.
But this business that we're in is much bigger than that. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're done playing the show, you've got to go home somewhere. You know, if you're preparing for a show, you have to prepare for it. And there's just, the word that comes to mind the most is sacrifice, you know, and it comes from so many different angles. So to me, it's important to be able to showcase the reality of what it is that we do. You know, it's really wonderful, again, to have a job, but it's not as glamorous as you might think. You know, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of sleepless nights. There's a lot of days where you're exhausted, but you know what? You've got to go in there and perform a 3-hour show, in my case, and it can never dip below a certain level. You know, it just can't. There's no way you can phone in that show. It just will never happen. And if it does, the show's going to be a train wreck. So so things like that, you know. And then if you have a family, you have children, you know, you have a mortgage to pay, you have health insurance to pay. There's just so much stuff. If we're talking again about education, there's so much stuff that comes before the show. You know, the show comes after. This other stuff comes first. And it's important to address that stuff because it never really gets discussed.
Had you gotten feedback from like students? Are you feeling like they aren't asking you this question?
No.
Okay.
No, I think that I think it's just something I feel very strongly about. You know, I don't know whether it was because they weren't asking. It's not because they weren't asking. It's just because I think it needs to be asked. I think it's something that needs to be discussed more than anything. And a couple of times throughout, you know, the different clinics that I've done and the different presentations throughout the last 2 or 3 years, people will ask. There's always one person that asks a very personal question.
Sure.
And then you leave yourself thinking, oh, my God, that's such a great question. But it was only one person that had the courage to step up and ask something. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't have the courage enough to present it. So now I have sort of I feel like I have a format, a stage where I can actually compose something very personal. And whether they want to ask it or they don't, I'm able to sort of present it as part of my composition. And so yeah, I feel strongly about that for sure.
Is it the courage, or do you think it's, is it sometimes like maybe just either a lack of interest or a lack of just understanding this other, the rest of your life versus the 3 hours that you're performing on stage or below stage technically?
I think it's just that this stuff is just overpowers everything else. I mean, there's so much information. So usually you don't have enough time to really get into all of the other stuff. And what people want to really talk about is, man, you got 5 snare drums. You know,
yeah.
What skill is that? Or how did you get from that passage? Or, you know, who wrote that? Or did you do this or did you do that? And so, again, I think it's just a great outlet for me to be able to present something that I feel really strongly about that will help an individual understand much greater if they really want to do this. Well, that's the playing part of it. Here's the not so glamorous part of it. Here's the stuff that really you're going to deal with before you even get to that. If you're equipped to deal with this, you're going to be much better equipped to deal with that.
Thank you so much to all of my guests for giving their time for this preview project. A number of them, you will hear a full interview with them at a later date. But for right now, go see their sessions. And again, in lieu of a rave this week, go to PASIC. It's usually a wonderful few days, getting to see all of your friends and colleagues again, getting to enjoy great and sometimes not so great sessions, getting a chance to walk around the Expo Center and buy a lot of new music and gear, and frolic in the cold Indiana weather. Maybe not on that one. I'll be there, so find me, say hello, and let's chat. Looking forward to it. Until then.